wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago. Welcome to one of the most appreciated segments of Sunday morning in the 7 o'clock hour, Abandoned Manitoba. Gordon Goldsborough joins me now from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Now remind us of the clue that you gave us last week.
I said that we were going to visit a secluded spot in the forest near Caddy Lake in the Whiteshell Provincial Park, and this spot reminds us of the history of mail delivery in Canada.
Now, how did you come across this spot?
This was actually a hint from somebody who contacted me by email. They said, hey, do you know about this spot? I went, I have no idea.
Great. So what spot are we talking about?
It's a place, well, it has a backstory, and maybe it would be easier to explain if we go back right to the backstory first.
I like this. Keep us on the edge
Keep
of
you
our
on the
seats.
Edge. Keep you on the edge. That's right. Okay. Well, the story starts in 1933. This is now the height of the Great Depression, and there's thousands of able-bodied men and women who are unemployed. The federal government of R.B. Bennett decides they're going to put them to work. So they created a series of work camps across the country where men were put to work. I don't know that terribly many women worked in these camps, but certainly men did. And in return for labor, they were provided with food, they were provided with shelter, and the princely sum of 20 cents a day.
Which back then was that decent?
Well, no, there were complaints that this was slave labor, that they were put to work for very little money, but it was compared to what they would have otherwise, which is nothing. It was seen as at least better than nothing. So they were put to work building public infrastructure. So, for example, they built many of the roads and buildings in Riding Mountain National Park.
Okay.
And that was right in the 1930s when the park was first established. In the eastern part of Manitoba, in the Whiteshell Forest Reserve, as it was called then, they were put to work building, among other things, the Trans-Canada Highway. So today, of course, we take for granted that there's this highway right to Kenora. That's when it was built, and that's how it was built, is by these relief workers during the Great Depression. Well, there was a camp of them camped out near Caddy Lake, and in 1933, the fall of 1933, they were given the direction that they were to start building what was called an emergency airfield. And it was about a mile and a half west of the Ontario border. Now, first of all, what's an emergency airfield? An emergency airfield is where they land or take off after an emergency. Maybe they've had a mechanical problem. Maybe the weather is bad and they have to put down because it's too dangerous to fly through the bad weather. Well, anyway, this crew then, they cut down all the trees because this is, of course, a very forested area of the province. They leveled the terrain and they built a large triangle. Three runways making up this airfield so that the aircraft could land basically in any weather. They had an east-west runway that was about 0.6 of a mile in length. They had two other runways, one going from the southeast to the northwest, the other going from the southwest to the northeast. And each of those was about a half mile in length, so made a great big triangle out of the forest. So the idea was that this was part of a network across Canada. Now, you have to think of what's going on at this time. This is now in the 1920s and 30s. Aviation was becoming big. Of course, during the First World War was when we first saw the uses of aircraft for a practical purpose. They were used in fighting the war. And of course, we think of the Red Baron, for example, and his aircraft. Well, during the 20s, we began to turn those aircraft over to civil purposes. And so, for example, in 1926, a very famous Winnipegger by the name of James Richardson, he helped to establish something called Western Canada Airways. And in 1929, he merged it into something called Canadian Airways. So, in other words, airlines were beginning to form. And the idea was they were going to use these airlines to do civil works. In the federal government formed something called Trans-Canada Airlines in 1937. And that's, in fact, the forerunner of today's Air Canada. So what's happening basically is the modern air traffic is starting to develop. You know, so on the 1st of March, for example, 1939, TCA initiates the very first cross-country delivery of mail. You know, and so later we would start calling it airmail. You know, mm-hmm. And if you wanted to get a letter there fast, you'd send it by airmail because it would, of course, be flown as opposed to being driven or on a boat or on a train. And this meant that it was much, much faster. And today we don't even think so much about airmail because it's just so commonplace that, you know, we just imagine that if we just pay a little more, it'll get there faster. And we don't really think how it gets there, but that's how it began. And even maybe more significantly, that was March of 1939. April of 1939, they initiated the first passenger service. In other words, if you wanted to get from point A to point B in Canada, you could get on an airplane and be there within hours as opposed to days by train. So there was the dramatic transformation that was taking place. Well, unfortunately, a lot of Canada is not very amenable to airplanes, especially the airplanes of the day. They didn't have the ability to travel thousands of miles the way planes can today. Back in those days, the planes were pretty primitive, and so you couldn't necessarily expect, you know, if the weather got bad, rather than just go up above the bad weather, you'd have to come descend and land. Mm-hmm. Or if you had a mechanical problem, you know, you'd have to land and then hope you could repair it, or maybe you'd have to, you know, somehow get it somewhere out by way of the train. So in fact, most of these emergency airfields were built near the railway so that, well, in the case of this one we're talking about in the Whiteshell Provincial Park, it's less than a mile away from the CPR main line. So the idea is that if a plane had to land there in emergency, they could always walk over to the main line, flag down a passing train, and catch the train to their next destination.
Well, I was going to ask, why was this airfield built in that particular location?
Well, because they built them every so far apart. Now, I've seen various estimates as to the distance between these emergency airfields. I've seen some reports that they're as little as 25 miles apart. They may be as much as 100 miles apart. But I guess the idea was that to have them more frequent in places where there weren't any alternatives. So once you're out on the prairies, for example, there's lots of places that you could land if you had to, a lot of roads and places. But here, because it was so heavily forested, well, in fact, there were actually three of these runways that were going to be constructed in this part of Manitoba. The one we're talking about near Caddy Lake, but also one near Lac de Bonnie and another one near Whitemouth. And they're not that far away. Mm-hmm. So the idea was there were so many planes that were being flown now that you needed to have the facility to land them if there was an emergency. So
how often was this airfield used for an actual emergency?
Well, as near as I've been able to determine, never.
Okay.
Which is, I suppose, is good. They did use it for other purposes. For instance, there are a few people in this area that had recreational cottages, and some of them had small aircraft, and they would simply land there, and then they could just boat or walk to their cottage. During the Second World War, because there was a lot of military aircraft flying, I'm told that it's possible they may have, in fact, had military aircraft land there. There was, in fact, during the war, actually a caretaker on residence, and so it may have been a little busier during the war, but no, as near as I can tell, it was never really used to the degree that it was intended. So they built it from the fall of 1933 to the spring of 1934. And then they continued to cut the trees down because, of course, the trees would grow back. They cut them down until sometime in the early 1950s. But by the 1970s, they had pretty much abandoned any tree cutting. So, in fact, I found an aerial photo of the site from 1970. And you can already see where the runways had been, that there's already trees sprouting up all over the place. So what I was interested in when I was first alerted to this spot was, well, can you see any evidence of it today? So the first thing I did is I zoomed in using Google Earth, and yes, indeed, you can still see you can see the east-west runway, all right. Mm-hmm. You can kind of make out a little bit of the one on the west side, but the other one on the east side, you couldn't see a thing. So I thought, well, this is something I got to go see for myself. So I walked in there. It's a good 3.5 mile walk. It's a pretty healthy walk. I sent my drone up in the air to see if I could see evidence of it. Now, unfortunately, this area had a big forest fire last spring, in the spring of 2016, there were a lot of dead trees around, and I therefore couldn't make out at all any sign of the runways. Pretty much nature had taken its course, and if there was any evidence of those old runways, it's pretty much gone. And I was a little disappointed at that. I thought, you know, too bad. But then, as I was walking, I noticed that there was actually a trail, and it turns out it's part of the Manterio Trail. It's a very nice sort of walking trail in that part of the province. And right along the trail was a basement, a concrete basement. And I stepped it out. It turns out it's about 900 square feet. So it's about the size of a little home. And in fact, my research indicates that was probably what it was. It was the home of the caretaker that had looked after the runways during the Second World War.
And it was still there.
It was the basement was still there. The building itself was gone, but the basement was still there. And then not far away were four concrete blocks, and they had bolts sticking out of them, which I think were meant – they were the pads on which a tower had once stood, a metal tower. And it was either some kind of transmission tower. Maybe it was the way that they could signal that they had had to land. Maybe they went in and made a mayday call so that they could get help. Or maybe it was simply a fire observation tower. I'm not certain. But the tower itself was gone, but these four concrete blocks were still there. So there is some evidence of the fact that this was once – an emergency airfield that tells us something about the early history of mail delivery, that at one time, you know, mail was delivered by aircraft.
We take that for granted.
But, we do indeed. Absolutely.
Gordon, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
And can you give us the clue for next week?
Well, we're going to examine a link between the late artist Andy Warhol and the city of Port Isle Prairie.
I look forward to that one. Gordon, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Nadia.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.